Casting fee, and the opinions expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
Good morning, Greenwich. It's 9:30 on this beautiful April Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk with me, Jen Graziano. I'm the co-owner of Cox and Graziano Funeral Home, located at 134 Hamilton Avenue, and as part of my family's commitment to the community, I come to you every Wednesday, talking to people that matter, about things that matter, in a place that matters, right here in Greenwich. Good morning to our listeners on 1490 WGCH, the voice of Greenwich. Hello to Bob. And good morning, Facebook Live viewers. Hello, Tim. Thank you for joining us today. I am very, very happy to be joined by a guest who, this is her second time in the studio with us, and she's also a contributing writer to this current issue of Coming of Age, which hopefully you've read digitally, but if not, you can still do that via Facebook issue or Cox and Graziano's website, and hard copies to follow at local libraries and doctor's offices, salons, you name it, coming shortly. I am speaking with Dr. Donna Coletti. She is the scholar in residence at the Kenarek Center for the Egan School of Health at Fairfield University. She's also in private practice right here in Greenwich, the founder of Palliative Care Plans. Her focus is palliative care medicine, and when she was on last time, she really broke down palliative care medicine and why it's not a sign of defeat and why this is something that more people should explore as an option for their care plan. But I welcome you back, Doctor.
Thank you, Jen. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think you really are just a very wonderfully informative resource, and I think you make this sensitive topic very broachable for many people. So I commend you for that, and I'm happy to have you here speaking today on the subject of DNRs, healthcare plans, and in advance of National Healthcare Advanced Directive Day coming up on April 16th. So I welcome you back. Just tell us briefly a bit about your background, because I'm always amazed that you have run the circle of life. You began your career in obstetrics, and now you are here discussing palliative care and hospice. Tell us a bit about yourself.
Thanks, Jen. Of course, and I greatly appreciate you asking me back, because I euphemistically like to refer to next week as death and taxes, because for obvious reasons, the two things we can't avoid, which is why Healthcare Decisions Day is on the 16th following Tax Day. And I think it gives us that wake-up call every year to think about what our wishes are. Even if people aren't prepared to actually execute a document, they can start to think about it and talk about it. I came to this basically because I had to take care of my parents, and you know, part of that sandwich generation. Mm-hmm. As you said, I was an OBGYN and practicing here in town, and you know, very happy in my current position. And when I had to take in my parents, I recognized the need for what we call slow medicine. And what that is not to necessarily believe that the same aggressive tactics that we take for younger and healthier bodies are applicable to those who are in, you know, the last stages of their life, whether it be days to weeks to months to years, because the older patients and the sicker patients often don't respond well to aggressive measures. And I saw that in my own home. They gave my dad 2 weeks to live, which is why they moved in with us. And he lived a year and a half on hospice in my home.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that. And I actually, there are so many studies that show that if people begin this palliative course and the hospice course of treatment, it's not to shorten their days, but rather to impose a quality on the days that they have left. So it's not about the aggressive treatments anymore and the treatments to an end that perhaps is just to no avail, but it's about comfort and making sure that the time you have left on this earth is as optimal as can be. You know, I've read stories that it allows people the chances to have conversations and leave nothing left unsaid, because you're able to actually have conversations. The treatment that you're getting allows you to speak, to interact, to enjoy and recognize and be cognizant of the people that are in fact around you. So how do we dispel this notion that hospice and palliative medicine is defeatist?
You know, it's so funny, the timing of things. I got a cartoon link this morning from one of my palliative care colleagues, which went viral on Twitter yesterday.
Really?
And what it was a young man standing in a house that's visibly on fire. And the fire department comes. And the young man says, there's a family in this house, and they need to know what's happening. And he said, well, we're the fire department. We're here to put out your fire. Well, okay, you can talk to the family, but please don't use the word fire. It's going to make them upset. But we're the fire department, you know, and it goes back and forth.
And
it was hilarious.
It, you know, it is. And it sticks. And even the conversation we had prior to going on air, you know, there are things in life that are so difficult, but no one escapes this life without going through something. And it's just the reality. You don't get out of here alive, and you don't get out of here without watching your loved ones go before you. And this is hard, and this is painful, and no one wants to go through it. But that cartoon is speaking to a much larger point. When you're going through it, you have to do just that. You have to go through it.
You have to be present.
Absolutely.
Right, you have to be willing to be present.
And shunning and you know, putting the blinders on and the rose-colored lenses and avoiding the words, you know, euphemistic language really serves a disservice to people, even in the bereavement process, you know. You know, you're always taught not to say to a child they're resting or they've just closed their eyes, whereas euphemisms are well-intentioned words. You have to go through that which is uncomfortable. It's ultimately going to be your biggest defense in your war against whatever you're waging, to be present, to be cognizant, and to just acknowledge this is what's happening. And that will enable you to make better decisions for yourself and your loved ones when you acknowledge the situation. So the case of, again, your father in hospice, I can only imagine what your father meant to you, for your mother and father, for you to want to be in charge of their care. And also as a doctor, it's similar, I'm sure, to what I go through as a funeral director when I lose someone. Everybody thinks that you just know everything that's happening and you should be so okay with it. I think loss takes on a much different connotation in your line of work and mine. You almost forget all of your skills and you know, you
become human.
You become human. And it's good because it allows you that humanity to connect with the people that you're helping. I'm sure, you know, following that experience with your dad, you went back to work with a much more heightened sensitivity to the families you were meeting with. I know in my own case, when it's someone in my family that I go through a loss, that next family I meet with, I'm just in their shoes. And I think that humanity is good for people in all professions, yours and mine particularly.
Obviously.
But again, you acknowledge the situation with your father that the aggressive medical treatments were not getting anywhere. So you make the decision now for hospice care. Again, that's a decision, folks, that a lot of people don't want to make because they don't want to make that leap to acknowledge that the treatments aren't working. So again, part of what you do when you lecture in the community and you have your practice in town and you have conversations with people is you get them talking. You get them to acknowledge the matter at hand. And once the reality of the situation is addressed, how do the conversations flow from there? What are the immediate changes once they make the decision for hospice and palliative care? How does that change the course?
So, you know, we like to say that hospice is easy and palliative care is hard.
Well, explain that distinction.
And, you know, not that hospice is easy. You know, it's, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek. But the point is that starting that discussion, once someone is already signed on to hospice, they've already accommodated to the idea that, you know, and having a discussion of what services are available to them and how things are going to go is a lot easier once they've already decided that they're ready for that. Palliative care is that middle ground. It's for people with serious illnesses and having them understand where they are in their disease trajectory and that they have choices before them and helping them make those choices. So the idea that palliative care is hard is because you're walking that walk with them. and you're meeting them where they are, and you're helping them understand when and when not they're ready for hospice. So, you know, you're often meeting people who are just thinking, you know, their next treatment is tomorrow.
Right.
And
right.
haven't really been introduced to the idea that the treatments aren't necessarily working or sustaining a quality of life which they otherwise would want.
It's about that quality. And I've seen in my own experience with family members, you know when the end is upon you, when the quality is not there. And they are just a shell of themselves that is left behind. And I get it. The struggle is so real. Because if only you can keep them here forever. And yep. the most selfless act you could ever do is telling someone it's okay to go. And they just become not themselves. And sometimes that seems as if it happens overnight. And I we have discussed before, my own views on hospice were changed just coming up on a year ago this week with a dear, dear family friend. And when my mom told me, you know, the word hospice right away, my heart sunk, admittedly. But what I watched them do for our friend Irene was just to give a quality that her time was the same either way, but it was a better arguable time left once they stopped poking and prodding and just, you know, it was about her comfort. It was about getting people around her in those days. But again, difficult conversations to have, but hospice does give you that. When people sign on to hospice, there's somewhat of an acceptance of the other treatments as well. But I want to talk a bit about National Healthcare Decisions Day. How long, in fact, has this been in place? Because prior to you, I had not known that such day existed.
So I can't say exactly, but I would believe it's at least 10 years.
Okay. And it is funny that it is the day after tax. It is April 16th, folks. So it's National Healthcare Decisions Day. And it's a day designed to inspire, educate, and empower the public about the importance of advanced care planning. The name of your practice, again, Dr. Coletti, is what?
Palliative Care Plans.
And you put the word plan in because it is just that. It is a plan. What is the difference of families that you meet in the presence and the absence of a plan?
Chaos. Basically, when people first call me, many times if they found my website or someone gave them my name, and they'll call me and they'll sound just distraught on the phone. Like, I don't know if I'm ready for this, or I don't know if my husband's ready to talk to you. All I know is I don't know, you know, where we are in his disease course, or we just came from the doctor's office. We're in the car on the way back, and they told us something that we were just not prepared for. We don't know where we're going next. And so that's where we start.
It's panic. It's chaos and panic. And the problem is when you're at that stage, you're reacting, but you're not of sound mind and thought.
You're absorbing.
You're absolutely not. It's hard to make key decisions when grief and emotions are taking over. The best time to make decisions is when you are healthier and earlier. And that's the hard pitch when you're lecturing to people about making a plan, even a funeral plan. You know, you do these advanced plans when you're healthy, or when you're of sound mind and body, or when you have clarity of thought. Because when you lose the clarity of thought, you're not making the best decisions, arguably. You're making them under the gun, under pressure, and laboring under grief or stress. And it's the same thing when you get that panicked phone call. So this day on April 16th is really designed for awareness, to raise awareness. And under the info that I'm reading here of caringinfo.org, they're saying on this day to have a conversation, start having conversations with your family about what you want. I'm sure you can't underscore the importance of that.
Absolutely. And, you know, the challenge is making people feel comfortable enough themselves with how they feel about themselves and taking their emotional temperature with regard to their own ideas about this before they can ever bring it up to someone else.
Right.
And because obviously they avoid the discussion because it makes them feel uncomfortable. So part of this is just trying to communicate to people that it's okay to talk about this, and plans can change and decisions
right.
can change.
Right.
And well, they might feel though, well, I'm not ready to make that decision. Well, you don't necessarily have to make any decision. This is about a discussion and
it's
understanding how to approach it.
I like this term, conversations before the crisis. Mm-hmm. And they are different conversations than those that you would have in the midst of the crisis. So it's having the conversation, completing your advance directive plans, and engaging those who are part of that plan. Let's speak to the legalities a bit, Dr. Colletti. What are the documents that are needed to be in place? And, you know, let's take that one step further. Does it always have to be in the confines of an attorney's office sitting across a great big intimidating conference table?
I'm really glad you brought that up because there are different documents. And a lot of the times people don't ever get to fill them out because they view it at this as this intimidating process.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be that way at all. There are different levels of documents. So, for example, there's a document that's called the Five Wishes, which is basically a prescribed document which in very simple language says, you know, I would like to have music played. I wouldn't like to have music played. You don't need anyone around but yourself to sign this.
Is this a legally enforceable document? And is it something that's given upon admission to a facility or admission to a hospice program?
So, yes, it can be given. You can carry it with whatever institution or location that you're at.
Okay.
It's honored by any caregiver.
Okay.
The question always comes down to, at the time the person is ill, if they're not able to speak for themselves, is the person who is speaking for them being consistent with the wishes that the person expressed?
There's a legal weight to this document.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and that's another thing too. Mm-hmm. You know, there are complex family situations. Dr. Colletti and I were speaking about that prior to the show. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have these situations, also when you mention people making decisions if they coincide with the wishes listed on the five wish document, but we'll take that one step further. When you have subsequent spouses, you know, the second wife, and children from a prior marriage, those situations can often become a little dicey. Or when you have the longtime companion who has arguably a very emotional significance, but not awaited legal significance, and then you have children. These are situations, folks, where it begs the need for something spelled out. Correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, even if you don't start with a document like the Five Wishes, someone could just write a letter, just a simple letter, you know, saying, I've been thinking about this and this is what I want. And if they sign it, that's a document that's respected by attorneys.
Because it's showing the intent
exactly.
of the person.
Exactly.
Right. Anything that demonstrates intent. But again, if such instruments are created in the height of the illness or in the height of the strain, they're always challengeable because are you of sound mind and body when you execute the document?
Which then speaks to your point of executing these things when someone is not in distress.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, it forces this uncomfortable conversation because we all know who you are out there if you have these situations, and everyone is well-intentioned, but human nature is real. Emotions are real, and these are emotionally charged situations. So if you are finding yourself that you are of this background where perhaps there's not an immediate bloodline relative in your vicinity, perhaps your children have moved away or you have no children and your friends are the caretakers, or, you know, there's that second or third cousin that you're close to, spell everything out. Clear the ambiguity, clear the room for, you know, for debate. Spell everything out while you can.
That's absolutely true. And there is a legal document which is called a health care proxy,
yes,
or health care surrogate.
Yes, please talk about that. I'm glad we're talking about that.
And that enables someone to name an individual as their representative if they can't speak for themselves. The main important fact, I feel, is that you have to tell that person that you're naming them.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of people do it, and then they figured, oh, yeah, well, I'll tell them. But then that uncomfortable point comes where they don't want to bring up the subject. And yes. I can't tell you the number of times I've had people, in fact, it actually happened to me, where I was actually called and said, oh, well, you know, you're the representative for this individual. I'm like, I am?
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that.
Well, nothing like, you know, last minute surprises. Question for you, doctor. Is there an automatic spousal ability to make decisions, or does there still have to be the presence of the healthcare proxy or the legal document?
So, you know, every state has its own laws, but in general, the spouse is considered the next of kin.
Right.
And then the children follow the spouse.
So you can, so as that next of kin status, that will enable you to make healthcare decisions.
That's true.
Okay. But again, folks, when you have those uncommon, or not uncommon, I shouldn't say, because the uncommons become very common nowadays, you know, situations where people freely throw around, well, I'm a power of attorney. Well, that has no significance in your realm or mine in the funeral home as well. Mm-hmm. So people take that for granted. Or, you know, people use the word domestic partner very readily. A domestic partner means nothing unless you're on a domestic registry. So there are places now where you can be recognized as that. And, you know, you could cohabitate as a couple for years and years and years and just assume that there's a legal significance, but there's not. So, you know, people who have the companion situations, perhaps their spouse died and they've taken on a companion, you have to give someone that weighted legal significance. Dr. Coletti, you're doing workshops, and I want to talk about those because I really want people to hear your message, and I'm happy to help you spread your word because I don't think enough people know the significance of what you are doing. Where are you going to be doing these workshops and what are they on?
Thank you, Jen. I really appreciate your support in raising the awareness of how people can obtain this information. So at Fairfield University in their Barone Campus Center on April 9th, we're having just an open table where we'll have examples of these different instruments, the five wishes, healthcare proxy. You mentioned durable power of attorney. People often confuse that with healthcare proxy. Mm-hmm. They're two different instruments.
Yes.
Living will,
yep,
which people often think is a legal document, which in some states it is, but in some states it's not actually legal, meaning that it doesn't have to be notarized. It doesn't have to be done by an attorney. It just has to be witnessed. You know, so there are different documents, and we'll have them there for people to see.
Wonderful. That's April 9th?
That's April 9th.
That's this Tuesday?
Correct.
Okay, this coming Tuesday. Wow, April is flying. And that's over at Fairfield University in the Barone Campus Center.
That's true.
And your next event on April 17th?
That is at the Dolan School of Business, once again at Fairfield. And that's an open workshop where I will give a brief 15-minute talk about advanced directives, and then we'll have different tables where there'll be an attorney at one table discussing the legal aspects of advanced directives. I'll be at a table discussing the medical aspects. We'll again have all of these documents present for people to look at. We'll also have what we call a preflection, meaning that we'll have people give them time to be able to think about, well, you know, what would you want? You know, who do you want as a healthcare proxy? You know, what would you want for services, or would you not want, you know, to give them some time to think about this in a private period, so that when they then look at the documents, they will have had some time
Absolutely.
To process it.
And they'll have a little bit of background information. Mm-hmm. But as always, the easiest way to find you is at your local practice. You practice right here in Greenwich. Is there a website for your practice where people can learn more?
Yeah, it's www.palliativecareplans.com.
Palliative Care Plans. I really can't stress enough the importance of talking and having those conversations which are uncomfortable. I mean, that's where the whole inspiration for the show and the magazine came from, is just having these uncomfortable dialogues, but we have to have them. And again, you know, no one says that they're easy and no one wishes to be in these situations, but you're doing yourself and your loved ones a disservice if you find yourself in these situations and you're not being real about them and you're not doing all you can to have real, meaningful dialogues. Once you get past the discomfort, though, you make decisions that are going to benefit you and your family in the long run. So I always say temporary discomfort offset by long-term benefits.
So. Absolutely. It's so wise. You know, as with anything else, it's muscle memory. Once you've had the experience and you've been through it, you're able, when the next time it comes up, say, okay, been there, done that.
It's
I
very
know how
true.
To proceed.
It's very true. You get an education, trial by fire in these situations. But palliativecareplans.com. And your two workshops are coming up April 9th and April 17th. And Fairfield University is not that far of a ride from right here in Greenwich to our local listeners, but it's worth mm-hmm. it. But the whole point of why we met today ahead of National Advanced Directives Day, take the time, folks. It's April 16th. And if you haven't thought about this, you know, there is a day dedicated to it because awareness needed to be raised. So I credit mm-hmm. what you're doing to help people bridge this gap between what they need to do and what they haven't done yet. Anything on that day, do you know if anything's available locally for people over in Greenwich or these forms? Mm-hmm. Are they available online? Is there a good spot to get people to go to?
So, yes. Greenwich Hospital every year has an advanced decision Decisions Day event
okay.
where they'll have a similar table outside okay. the cafeteria.
Oh, wonderful.
So they can go on the Greenwich Hospital website okay. and see when that's what day that's actually being held this year.
April 16th would be a Tuesday.
Correct. It's a Yale system
okay.
event, so it might not fall on that day. I'm not
gotcha.
Sure what day they
but
chose
But at least we
year.
Know it's coming up, so checking out the hospital website.
Correct.
We'll give that information to you. And it's a table that you say that has?
It's outside, usually outside the cafeteria at Greenwich Hospital.
You know, the other scenarios where time's coming to a close is we talked mm-hmm. about spousal issues. But when you have multiple children, you know, mm-hmm. three kids, four opinions, that's another thing, too. And that, you know, mm-hmm. who is in charge? And again, you're only helping your children in the long run. You know, people might be afraid to single a child out thinking they're playing favorites. But again, conversations that need to be had in advance.
Absolutely. And parents who have had these, you know, very close lifetime relationships with their children, they've taught them how to live. And this can give them that capacity to teach them how to die.
Oh, that's very wise. Dr. Donna Coletti, you are an amazing woman. I'm so happy that we've connected, and you will certainly be back in that seat talking to us very soon. But good luck in all you're doing this month.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you.
Read more about her in Coming of Age and go on her website to learn more. And this is Jen Graziano thanking you for taking the time to listen as we had a very important talk today. Have a great day, Greenwich. Bye-bye.
The station you grew up with, 1490 WGCH Greenwich.
Subpoena Healthcare Squabble. I'm John Trout.
Congress is entitled to all of the evidence. This isn't just my opinion.